the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Broadcaster Fionnuala Jones and TV producer Paddy Duffy with us for the week trending. And I want to start with a listener says, absolutely appalled by the reaction to the Dublin Rose, born and raised in Ireland, end of. The racists are showing their true colours now. Awful stuff. People who are how many generations Irish being abused, shame on us. Okay, Fionnuala, tell us all about the Dublin contestant for the Rose of Tralee.
Yes, so this is Suad Moog. She's the Dublin Rose of Tralee, as you said. She's a medical scientist in histology. She was chosen last week to represent Dublin at the festival in Tralee in August. She's a youth leader with Support Against Racism, and she has been talking about the racial abuse she's faced in the wake of her win. And it's kind of really sad to hear her talk about it. I think she kind of felt there was like an expectation of some, but it's the extent of it that really surprised her. And she said, you know, like some of it obviously doesn't faze her because, again, unfortunately, it's nothing that she hasn't heard before. She says in her own words, I was definitely not shocked, but I was more so surprised at the volume of hate which is coming out. It has been constant since the result was posted, she said. And as you said, like she's born in Sligo, brought up in Dublin, and she is very much saying anyone who has Irish ancestry or are Irish citizens can enter the competition. Like this win is completely valid. And when you talk through her accomplishments there, all the things that I've just already said that she's doing and she's done, like she is the most incredible, I mean, total, everything that we think about when we think of Rose Tralee, whatever, and I know, again, that's weighing into another kettle of fish in terms of what we think of that competition or whatever. But like,
don't now,
lovely girls competition. I can already see the texters running to their phone. But like, when you read the description.
Oh, yeah, see, this is it. It's suddenly the Liberals are all in favour of the Rose Tralee now, isn't it?
Look, I think she is just like the perfect example of what it should mean to be Irish. I mean, like leading the youth in sport, like being this perfect example or as close to perfect. I don't know. It's just so sad to say that when she's talking about, again, like the level of abuse, you're talking 4,000 posts on X. 4,000. What are those people, if they are real people, I mean, possibly bots as well, engaging against a 25-year-old woman who is respectfully, again, participating in a beauty pageant, like a bit of a laugh, a bit of crack,
okay.
Arguably.
Her parents are from Somalia. Mm-hmm. And I think Somalia featured in one of the video posted by the Dublin by-election, central by-election candidate, Gerry Hodge, sort of, I think, taking inspiration from Donald Trump, who has made Somalia the target of so much of his racist abuse. Yeah. What do you make of this all, Paddy?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a very worrying kind of degree of othering here and sort of and specifically sort of in around sort of East Africa and Somalia. I mean, let's not forget, though, that one of the reasons that Donald Trump is so enraged about Somalia is because Ilhan Omar, one of the most dignified and intelligent and fearless congresswomen, you know, in the House or Senate, is of Somalian ancestry. And I think it enrages him. And I think that is sort of really the key here, is that some people are unbelievably rattled at the idea that somebody like Suad, with such, you know, is by any metric a model citizen, and seems to be absolutely rattled with this incredibly narrow definition of Irishness. I mean, narrow by any definition at all. And I think it just shows, I mean, it's like, you know, I was really struck by one of the quotes that she said, you know, like, I take pride in going forward for things like this. And I'm just grateful to be given the opportunity. What a gracious and dignified thing to say in the face of 4,000, you know, knuckle draggers saying what they're saying on places like X. Because, you know, all the things that Suad does for her communities, whether in Sligo or Dublin and beyond, I would wonder what the social CV is of the people that are abusing her on Twitter.
Something I just thought of there as we started discussing it, it hadn't come to mind until now, but if she's 25, that means she was born in 2001. And it was either 2004 or 2005. We had a referendum in this country in which we decided that children born in Ireland to non-Irish nationals could not receive automatic birthright citizenship, which means she was in ahead of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we sometimes look at what's going on in the United States of America and we criticize them. But we should remember we had our own constitutional referendum, and we showed a lack of charity, shall we say. and left an awful lot of children potentially stateless.
No, absolutely. And I think it's been a real dark moment in what has not been an amazing century so far in Ireland. I think that really was a dark moment. And it struck me that the very Minister for Justice that introduced that was also, I noticed that during COVID, he was very upset about the Nubian statues outside the Shelburne Hotel. And I said, well, I'm very glad that he's concerned for the fates of those Africans, those statues. But in terms of the status of actual children, he seemed to be not very particularly caring about. And I think, you know, it was like, yeah, as Irish people, we need to be, I think, very, very acutely aware of this, of a doctrinaire idea of what it is to be Irish. I mean, not least for the fact that we are, you know, a diasporic nation. We have for hundreds
of... A
diasporic nation, or a nation of diaspora. We are, like, we have gone to everywhere. There's, you know, you could go to Outer Mongolia and see an Irish pub. And so we need to make sure that it is, you know, that we give as well as we take. And also just even to consider the fact that, like, from the very time that, just even the very narrow idea of Irishness in terms of, like, we've had Normans, we've had sort of all sorts of Celtic tribes, we've had people that have been coming to Ireland for centuries. So to the idea to sort of arbitrarily narrow what counts as Irish and arbitrarily narrow the date when, you know, when certain characteristics become significant is absolutely for the birds. And we need to be saying that at every turnabout.
I know that when Danny McConnell was here on Wednesday, it was discussed, but it wasn't particularly helpful either, was it, this video that circulated of former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern this week?
I had missed it. I was kind of watching the cover, but I was away on something, coverage, I should say, and I was away. And then when I came back and actually saw the video, I was, I suppose, shocked and then also kind of not shocked. I know Katie Giap has been covering this on her Substack as well and talking about it just from her perspective of people, you know, saying the quiet part out loud, that there is this unfortunate growing sentiment here and should we be afraid of the people?
Is there really? Because as I pointed out with Pat Leahy of the Irish Times earlier, when people were asked in the opinion poll for the Dublin Central by-election what were their major issues, they went with housing, they went with cost of living, immigration, despite the efforts of Gerry Hutch and Malachy Steenson and others, was with 12% of those polled.
Mm.
And a similarly low number over in Galway West in the poll over there. So despite the loud voices on social media, possibly amplified by bots, I remain to be convinced that this is what lots of people are talking about quietly.
I know, but I think we should also be wary that we can, it's not really a big concern now, or, you know, it's not coming up in results like that, but that doesn't mean we should ignore it either, because those loud voices, they won't stop. That amplification, that won't stop. And I fear it will only get worse.
And it is the sort of issue, I think, that does, because it does necessarily generate more heat than light, sometimes it does end up becoming maybe something where it, you know, becomes quite a casual thing to castigate certain people. So it can become a small issue until it's not. And then at what point, if we've not done the work on the ground, then we could find ourselves in some, like, and just in some very sort of casually, you know, casually racist excuses for all sorts of things that are no concern to people that are travelling here and trying to make a living like any of us are.
Jerry in Westmeath says, Reid 2004 referendum, it was not an uncharitable act. It was a democratic vote where the country spoke. Yes, it was a democratically endorsed referendum, but I still stand by the position that I took back then, that I thought it was a very uncharitable act. Let's move on to Eurovision. And that's on this weekend without Ireland.
I didn't notice.
Well, actually, to be honest, it's on this weekend without Ireland, because it's normally on every weekend without Ireland when it happens, given how rarely it is we ever get to the final. But this year we didn't even get to the semi-final because we didn't take part.
Mm.
Is there a suggestion now that we might have a sort of a breakaway Eurovision, a song for Europe, a sort of a provisional Eurovision or a continuity Eurovision?
Well, they tried to do this back in the 80s, didn't they? There was like a kind of a communist Eurovision. I think it was called like Inter-Europe or something like that. Maybe I said this is just off the... This is off the dome now, but yeah, I mean, I think that the very fact that Ireland, along with, you know, the Netherlands and Spain and a few others at Iceland, is, I suspect the reason that those five have ultimately found themselves out in a limb. I suspect that, like, when things were really at a boiling point as regards whether people should participate, I strongly suspected that those countries thought that more would eventually join, and so like they've kind of almost been painted into a principal corner now. So it is quite interesting to see just how it's just kind of carried on as ever now. And it's interesting to see now what will they do? What will all those countries do, Ireland included, do for next time?
Yeah, it's so interesting making that point that you said there about kind of them thinking maybe others would join when you look at it only being Iceland, the Netherlands, Slovenia, Spain, and obviously us. I mean, I would have been like a relatively big fan of Eurovision growing up. We would watch it kind of every year. And I remember it kind of being highlighted to me as a child that was like, it is a bit weird that like Israel is in this for also that like not in Europe, first of all, but also the general political situation.
It's a bit weird Australia been in there too.
Well, yeah. And look, Canada clamouring to get in as well, but we'll get to that. But like, I mean, Israel using this kind of weird political, not political song contest as this soft kind of power tool, as they're talking about in the New York Times this week. I'm just kind of like, I can't believe it's taken so long. I can't believe it took this war in Gaza for people to go, okay. And even again, then that was 2023, that all kicked off. And we were only kind of doing something now. And I feel like there's an expectation, you know, with RTE that they're kind of like, aren't we great that we boycotted and we're putting on Father Ted instead? And I'm kind of like, this is also kind of 3 years too late. Like hundreds of thousands of people are dead and now you're taking the moral stance. It's a bit, I don't know, I found it so bizarre to have the videos come up on my feed because obviously I still follow like the BBC or whatever and they're still showing it, they're still participating and you'd see the odd clip come up of a country and I'm like, this is really... Hunger Games
Boy,
were in
Boy
capital
George
vibes.
For San Marino.
Boy
was
George
one. Like,
for San Marino.
Yeah,
I said, what's going on here?
Yeah. Okay, well, a lot of bars are also saying they will not show it tomorrow night, including gay bars, which have made big parties out of Eurovision in previous years. But I wonder, I mean, will we be getting accurate figures as to how many people in Ireland watch the BBC coverage of it?
Well, I suspect it probably will. And I mean, I'm from the same town as Mickey Joe Hart is. And I remember that there were all sorts of suggestions that people were buying UK SIM cards and using them in bars in Lifford. And lo and behold, the UK gave Ireland 12 points that year. But I think it's an interesting point that you make about especially sort of gay bars and everything. I think it's an important thing to say about kind of about sort of issue solidarity, you know, sort of like people that sort of take a view and that... that you kind of you take a stance and you back it, and I think that's really to be commended. I think then to go further on what Fionnuala says as well is that, you know, well seen Russia's still not in the Eurovision Song Contest. And the Ukraine
I've got news for you because there's a story breaking this afternoon that apparently the Eurovision bosses are considering allowing Russia back in.
Oh, well, that's
brilliant.
Outstanding, isn't
Great.
It? Yeah. Well, you see, this kind of thing suggests to me is like, I don't know, sometimes is it cynicism or is it just credulousness on a massive scale where people say, oh, you know, no, it's all about love and music and fellowship when it suits people. Mm. And then when it doesn't, it's about politics and it's about solidarity. And so, yeah, it's honestly, when it comes to the organisers of Eurovision, sometimes I don't know, are they just so idealistic or naive, or, you know, that they, you know, I would love to sell them a bridge, or is it just genuine raw cynicism? And I genuinely can't tell the difference, to be honest.
Okay, some of your many comments. I'm a licence fee payer and RTE is denying us the chance to watch the Eurovision because the lefties run everything in this country.
Oh my God, it's always the lefties. Won't somebody please think of the righties not being able to see their songs?
Yeah.
Another one says, isn't the gas that Gerry Hart spends as much time in the Canary Islands and yet has an issue with foreigners coming to Ireland? And the irony of picking on the Dublin Rose as well is not most of our fellow contestants who are Irish immigrants scattered around the world.
Well, indeed.
Literally.
And children of immigrants who are brought home. Yeah. There is that. I want to go back to some of the other earlier comments that came into us about RT and the latest Mooney's Money, as I think it'll become known as. One listener says the RT list would be very different if managers were included. They do have a list where they do now actually have the list of Kevin Backhurst and all the various others, what they're paid. And I think there was about 7 people on pay between 200,000 and 330,000. And that actually would knock most of those from the presenter list off the top 10 list in RTE, but they do actually bring that forward every year. Another list says, why is the list a big issue? Is it just because they're rivals to Today FM? It doesn't seem to be an important issue at the moment. It's important to a lot of listeners who've been getting in contact in relation to this. So that's some of the stuff. And a listener says, I hope Derek Mooney will not be made a scapegoat for this. He's invaluable for the awareness and conservation he brings to wildlife. Okay, that's from Cahill in Galway. So tell us about Finola, as a person from Cove in Cork, I think you definitely should tell us all about the statue to commemorate the mosquito that killed Oliver Cromwell by infecting him with malaria in Cork.
I had previously known as Cork fever, apparently, which is just what I thought I got driving onto the M8, but apparently not. Yeah, this is so interesting. There's talks about commissioning a statue, as you said, to commemorate this mosquito that lives in legend that may have killed Oliver Cromwell by infecting him with malaria in Cork. It would be the world's smallest public statue if erected. They're looking at outside Cork City Hall, and this is being suggested by Green Party councillor Oliver Moore, and saying it could be, you know, bit gas, biggest county in Ireland, smallest statue in the world. But they're also kind of looking at, you know, I just thought it was really interesting that they're looking at kind of more novel ways to bring art into the public scheme and the public sphere. And I just thought, like, this is a bit gas. Like, obviously they can't, you know, they're talking about, like, it's this kind of, whether it's a real thing or whether it's legend or folk story from Cork, but they're pretty sure that he did die of malaria and that he contracted on his campaigns. That could have been in Cork. So they're kind of like, fair enough then. Surely that constitutes a mosquito in Cork City.
I have to be very careful about how I say this, but Finola, could it be that we have a bad record in Cork of killing major political and military figures, given that centuries later Michael Collins got killed in Cork as well?
So are we trying
albeit to... albeit not by a mosquito.
So we're trying to pass the buck here, or move some blame onto this poor little hypothetical mosquito. It was really interesting, though. They've gotten some other suggestions as well while they were looking for more suggestions for this kind of city project that they're looking at for the public art strategy. And they were also looking, I know we were talking about this off air, Paddy, knight who had been suffering with a hangover after a drinking binge in Cork in the 1100s.
Proper delirium tremens, yeah. No, yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? Yeah, sort of Tugdalus is his name. And yeah, and he wrote down basically his experiences. And because Irish people have been getting around for a long time, it was recorded by an itinerant monk called Brother Marcus in Regensburg in the south of Germany, and it ended up becoming by the definition of the time a bit of a smash hit. And so it's said now that he has inspired basically our very idea of what hell looks like. Now, bear in mind, like, this is in the 1100s, so this is like a good century or so before Dante's Divine Comedy. And apparently sort of Hieronymus Bosch was inspired by some of his visions as well. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, Cork has done, but also I have to say, as somebody that has lived in the UK for 15 years, anything that brings into focus as a tourist destination, spectacularly, you know, petty and hilarious as it is, anything where British people can actually learn a bit about Oliver Cromwell would be terrific, because I can vouch they do not know half of what he got up to.
Yeah.
Like, not even close. But yeah, I think this is absolutely terrific. It's, yes, yeah, Councillor Oliver Moore, and I mean, if anybody can bring this forward, you know, it's like they said that only Nixon could go to China, and I suppose only an Oliver could suggest this. But, you know, like, some of the suggestions in terms of sort of, you know, sort of our great knight Tugdalus or the mosquito that felled Oliver Cromwell, but then also Mary Delaney as sort of a traveller singer. I mean, yeah, it's a really good attitude, I think, to take to public art, to public history. You know, I think it's absolutely terrific and to really be commended, because, you know, councillors sometimes get stick for, you know, for their bad town planning and whatnot, but, like, you know, fair play where it's due.
Well, let's talk about councillors. Let's move to Monaghan, where they have an idea to create a quiet road between two villages in the north of the county.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
This is fascinating. I was also unfamiliar with what a quiet road constitutes. So this is coming from Monaghan County Council, as you said. A quiet road, or quiet roads, they're rural roads with low traffic volumes and speed, where using alternatives to vehicles is encouraged. So they would include like a 30-kilometre speed limit, new road markings to highlight a shared space. You've got traffic calming features, flashing speed signs and signage. And this would connect the two villages of Scotland Strathstown and Ballinoach to make it a safer shared road space for walkers, cyclists and local traffic. To which I say, brilliant. Like, why not? Like, this just makes complete sense and would do so much more to encourage people to get out of the cars and use other forms of transport, because I think that's a big barrier for people. I know it is for me, and I do not live in Monaghan, but like, even where I live, trying to move about, like, I would love to be able to cycle more. There's a lot of places where I don't really particularly feel safe because I don't think the infrastructure supports it. Sometimes the drivers don't support it. Not wading into that, but that's another story for another day. But yeah, why not?
Yeah,
brilliant.
I absolutely love this. I mean, you know, we've got quiet hours in which to do your shopping now. We've got quiet carriages, and it's like a quiet road. Is, you know, as soon as I saw it, it's like, my God, this is, I think, an absolute bit of genius.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, although I come across as very urbane and everything, it's, you know, I am actually from the shticks, like in a massive way. Oh, yeah. It's like I'm pure country. And so when I see things like this, I mean, you would describe the roads around me as worryingly multi-purpose, you know? I mean, it's like you could have...
This is in Mickey Joe Hart
this
country.
This is in Mickey Joe Hart
What's
country,
the name
yeah.
of the town?
Well, I'm from just outside Ballindrate, Argrey Hill, really, but between Lifford and Rafoe. And so it's, I mean,
that's rural.
Lifford has 1500 people in it, and Lifford people are considered townies. You know, that's sort of how rural we are. But yeah, but I mean, like on the roads that we have around us, you would have like big vans, maybe sort of like delivery vans out to things, but you would also have wains out cycling, or you have people out for a walk, or you'll have people that, you know, think that the roads are their own personal rally track. So to have somewhere where you can kind of siphon it off a wee bit, I think is absolutely brilliant. Because also, let's not forget that a lot of these roads were built around the time of our grandfathers and great-grandfathers. And the, you know, the most that they would have done on them is get on their bike and maybe cycle to a dance or something, or maybe crash into a hedge. And so, you know, we need to be a bit wary of just how multi-purpose these things are. So I think it's absolutely fantastic if there's limited space for driving, and where a set of people can kind of really cut loose. I think it's terrific.
Fionnuala, I haven't played Wordle in years. It was a big thing a few years ago, but is it still for many people a daily game that they play on their phones?
I mean, it's not for me because I also abandon it post-COVID, but an American network is kind of betting on people still at least being interested in it, a televisual version of it. NBC are making a TV show of Wordle, essentially. So they're bringing it game show format. For people that are not familiar with Wordle, it started as an online mobile game, started by Josh Wardle. He'd made it for his girlfriend, which I think is so cute. The New York Times ended up coming in, as they tend to, bought it for a low seven-figure sum. It basically involves people and players. They have to figure out a five-letter word in six guesses or fewer. Savannah Guthrie is going to host it. She's a Today Show anchor over in the States, and it's coming from the production company of Jimmy Fallon, who people know from The Tonight Show. I don't really know why they're doing this, and I don't have really, it's not that I have really strong negative feelings about Wordle or anything. I just kind of fell off it post-pandemic, as I said. Surely the thrill of Wordle, though, for people who are still playing it, or at least was when I was playing it, is to be kind of better than people you know, is to get one up on like your friends, your co-workers and your family. I don't care about people playing it on telly for money. I simply do not. Like, surely that's not the joy of it.
Okay, now Paddy, this I think is really in your remit, because I'm told you're a quiz master.
Oh.
So let's go through your CV.
Yeah, yeah.
2013 crowned World Music Quiz Champion.
That was, yeah, that was one of the early ones. Yeah, that was part of the World Quiz Champion. Yeah.
Did you identify the intro?
I did. I got that down past. Yeah,
okay, don't say it. Don't spoiler alert. I trust you that you know the answer to that. Yeah. Okay. Panelist in BBC Round 4's, Radio 4's Round Britain Quiz. Mm-hmm. You've written questions for Mastermind and University Challenge.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
You've never appeared on either of those, have
no,
you?
No, unfortunately, it rather pollutes the well whenever you've already written for it and you know everybody there. So, yeah, so I've written £1 million questions before, but I'll never be able to play one precisely because of that.
Sorry, £1 million questions?
Well, yes, I wrote for Millionaires. Oh, that was the other one. Yeah, so Mastermind, University Challenge is kind of where I started out.
Oh, what about the Chase? Yeah.
Never done the Chase, no. Never worked in the Chase. But I know, I mean, I know all the chasers, and I know a lot of people that have been on it and everything. It's like, so yeah, there's a real like quiz ecosystem out there. I mean, it's like, if you you know what it is? It's like, if you imagine like football in the 1950s, it's like, it's done to like quite, there's a lot of different competitions. There's a lot of very good players, but it's all kind of really for the love of the game. I wish there
was
more.
Yeah, but hold on. I love a good table quiz. Mm. But has it not been ruined by the mobile phone? Or are table quizzers, the majority of them anyway, make sure that they put their phone aside and they engage honestly with it.
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of things like that, I mean, there are definitely ways to sort of beat that. So yeah, there's oftentimes, you know, quiz masters can sort of, you know, there'll be sort of maybe penalties if people bring out their phone sort of when around his live or something like that. Certainly in some of the, like in the more heavy duty leagues, the kind of which I would play, you kind of have to have your hands in view in a Zoom at all times, you know, so you can't be like, you know, taping away and all that. But also then there's also like speed quizzes and things like that. So like you actually use your phone as your, like as your weapon of choice, you know.
I've done them before, yeah.
And so it's great, yeah. So then it's like, you know, you'll get a question and you'll type the first, you know, you'll type the first.
And what do you reckon Wordle will be like as a TV quiz show?
Well, now this is a really interesting one to me on all fronts. I mean,
it's a bit like Countdown without numbers, well, is it?
It's a bit like Countdown without numbers, but it's almost exactly like another show that has been on for many years in the US and UK, Lingo. It's like remarkably similar. And so, I mean, I'm sure the NBC team of lawyers have been over it like a rash to make sure that, you know, there's sufficiently different format points and whatnot. But I think it is, I think it's good. It's really, really interesting that this is even happening at all because, first of all, it's like, you know, as a TV producer, as much as a quiz guy, you often hear from commissioners kind of going and say, great, we want to see, you know, challenging brand new formats, things that really challenge us. And we don't mind if you're a small company, it's come one, come all. And then, of course, you see things like this where it's like massive company, already existing IP, let's play our game, you know. So I think it's, yeah, sort of, it is a little bit frustrating from a television perspective when people kind of talk out of both sides of their mouth. But I think that is exactly it, really, in terms of the New York Times has compelling IP. Everybody already knows what Wordle is, and they're basically going to rinse it.
Okay, listener says, speed quizzing is a hit in bars around Dublin and Wicklow. Bums on seats are normally quiet Wednesday nights.
Yeah, oh, well, and this is it. I mean, especially from a pub quiz, or indeed even sort of some of the local, like, I mean, there's a Dublin quiz league that happens of a Monday night, and the Irish quiz league happens on Zoom when it's in season of a Monday night. And so it's a good way to get people to bars that maybe wouldn't be otherwise there. But it also prevents cheating because you have to be quick when you're on your phone. And so it's actively disadvantageous to be Googling something because, like, you'll be miles behind and miles out of the game.
I know you're saying you can't do mastermind, but what would your specialist subject be?
So funnily enough, somebody actually did my
It would have to be music, wouldn't it? Yeah. If he's a world music quiz champion.
I wish they could play clips on that. Yeah, just give me like 2 seconds of a clip and then
beat the intro.
But that is hands down my favorite. And actually, I did work for the Hit List as well, which is like a music kind of a name that tune show on BBC One.
Great, but quickly answer Fiona's question.
So yes, it's already actually been done. Presidential elections from 1948 to the present day, and I only got one wrong.
Wow!
In Ireland.
For the US presidential election. Right, okay. But I wouldn't mind the Irish one either, mind you.
Paddy Duffy, Fionnuala Jones, thank you both so much.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.